Hi, I'm Rob, and this is another episode of Rewind and Review. As always, I'm joined by the guy who is a genuine slice of fried gold, Jason.
And just because you said that, we'll have a Bloody Mary first thing.
Yeah, bloody hell, we will. Yes, we will. Now, welcome to Rewind and Review, the retrospective podcast where we have a look at an existing property from the past, delve into its legacy, discuss how it's held up over time, and even give our own personal experiences. Did we watch it as a kid or sometime later in our lives?
This episode of Rewind and Review will look at the British romantic zombie comedy film. I just feel like that combination of words just was hard for me to say. This movie celebrates its 20th anniversary this year in 2024.
So get some red on you. Take a shortcut for the first time ever and prepare to take a bite of the first flavor of the Cornetto trilogy as we rewind to the year 2004.
Swinging 60s, here I come, baby, yeah!
Go back to then.
When?
Now!
Now?
Now! Ooh, that's how it always starts.
There's definitely a very slim chance of surviving.
Directed by Edgar Wright, who co-wrote it with Simon Pegg, Shaun of the Dead stars Pegg as Shaun. He's a downtrodden salesman who gets caught alongside his loved ones in a zombie apocalypse.
When he's not working at the electronics store, Shaun lives with his slovenly best friend Ed, who's played by Nick Frost, in a small flat on the outskirts of London. The only unpredictable element in his life is his girlfriend Liz, who's played by Kate Ashfield, who wishes desperately for Shaun to grow up and be a man.
When the zombies inexplicably show up, Shaun must rise to the occasion and protect both Liz and his mother, Barbara, played by Penelope Wilton.
This is the first installment in Wright and Pegg's Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, followed by Hot Fuzz from 2007 and The World's End from 2013, both of which also star Pegg and Frost.
Yeah. Now, be warned if you haven't seen Shaun of the Dead. But you do want to go watch it first before listening to this episode because we will be talking spoilers. Now, a bit of a popular movie. Jason, have you seen it before?
I have, luckily, but except for this recent rewatch in prep for this podcast today, I do believe I've only watched this the once. It's possible I've watched it twice, maybe,
That
but
just
it's one of those.
boggles my mind. Boggles my
Yeah, look,
mind.
and it was, I want to say around the time it sort of came out. I don't remember watching it at the movies. It would have been, I reckon it was around the time like Hot Fuzz came out, because I reckon I did,
Oh, yeah.
like I checked both of them out at the same time. Now I'll tell you, from my memory, like, and I look back on the movie and I go, I like the movie. I remember liking it, enjoying it, but not loving it. People would always talk about how freaking hilarious it, and I was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I like it, but something about it never really worked. And again, bear in mind, I'm pretty sure I've only watched it the one time, and this was, it's turning 20 years old this year. I want to say maybe like 15, 16 years ago. Now, I want to say this now. Watching this recently, this is a funny movie. I was laughing, man. Like, I don't know what it is, whether it's my weary age and just my sort of appreciation of like just the dry bitterness of the humor that comes with this, but the jokes were working, they were landing for me. I can already say like I had just a much better time in terms of what I remember of this movie. So retrospectively, I'm already going to jump in and say, look, I've had a better time. But how much of a better time? We'll discuss. But what about yourself?
Cool. So I've seen this movie heaps of times, right? So when it first came out, like what was the distance, what was the time frame between this and Hot Fuzz? It's only 3 years. 3 years.
It was right? Like 3 years, yeah.
So I watched this a lot in those 3 years. And then when Hot Fuzz came out, I watched that and loved that as well. And then I didn't actually revisit this one pretty much since, you know, so those 3 years a lot, and then a bit of a long gap. And I actually didn't end up by watching The World's End for like probably another like 6 or 7 years after that came out. But it was actually, I ended up by watching Hot Fuzz like more and just continually in that gap, you know. But this one, when it first came out for those first 3 years, I saw a lot of it. Now, same as you, I think. I think I actually watching it as a bit older. So I was just out of high school when that first one came, when this came out. I have so much more of an appreciation for just how clever Edgar Wright is with this. There's so many things that I just missed that I wasn't paying enough attention originally, you know, back when I was really slamming it for those 3 years. and that stuff, I'm really quite excited to talk about some of the things that it's just such clever filmmaking, you know, compared to, you know, it's just refreshing. I really do like Edgar Wright's creativity and how he puts things together. So yeah, this movie I've seen a lot, but not for quite a while. So revisiting again has been an absolute pleasure, I reckon. Yeah, so that's that.
And I feel like just like you said, like I've watched Hot Fuzz numerous times, like quite a few. And I'm literally sitting next to my array of physical media, my DVDs, my Blu-rays. I have Hot Fuzz. I do not have Shaun of the Dead.
I don't think I've got it either. I had to find it on it was on Binge, I think. I streamed it on Binge, maybe. You know, there's a bonus plug. We can have a free subscription thrown our way if you like. So that's our experience. Let's talk about this legacy. Jace, what do you got?
All right, I thought we'd mix things up a little bit here. I want to actually talk about the origins before we get into, like, you know, its performance and all that kind of stuff. So Shaun of the Dead is actually inspired by Art, an episode of Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright's sitcom Spaced. This was written by Pegg and Jessica Stevenson and directed by Wright. The episode involves Pegg's character hallucinating a zombie invasion after playing the video game Resident Evil 2 while under the influence of amphetamine. So the concept came from wondering what a British person's reaction to a zombie apocalypse would be. Wright considered the lack of firearms typical of American zombie movies. And he's like, look, there's a point of difference here. Let's explore that. Let's have fun there. Another influence from Wright's life came from how he missed the 2001 foot and mouth epidemic by simply not having paid attention to the news for a fortnight and turning his television on one day to see cattle being burnt, going, what the hell is
That's
going
amazing.
On? So this left him confused, obviously. He then realized that, look, it's plausible that two guys could also be the last to know about the world ending for pretty much the same reason, which is what we get here, the basic premise of this movie, all the fun is had. Wright and Pegg wrote the screenplay in 8 weeks. They were inspired by films including Night of the Living Dead from 1968 and Dawn of the Dead from 1978. Obviously, a lot of George A. Romero influence, including the title, all that kind of stuff, as well as Raising Arizona from 87, Back to the Future from 85, Brain Dead from 92, and The Birds from 63. So a few little fun things there. Look, the film was distributed by United International Pictures in the United Kingdom and Universal Pictures in the United States and Canada, as well as other international markets, of course. But this is where it gets interesting. Universal Pictures also distributed Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead at the time and only took on Shaun of the Dead after setting the condition that they would market and release it 2 weeks after the release of Snyder's film. So they basically said, hey, look, our Dawn of the Dead remake is getting our priority, getting all of our efforts. We're putting that out. That's what we want people to gravitate towards. And then 2 weeks later, okay, cool. Here's this satirical, you know, comedy spoof thing with zombies. from England.
That's brilliant. What a interesting backstory to how it's come about, and like just that concept. I didn't really think about how well they've done it until you've kind of read that out. But American zombie movies always are shoot 'em ups and things like that, because that's gun culture and stuff. And what would happen in the UK? It'd be people with shovels and bats. That's what they would do. That's how they would
literally cricket bats.
and there's such a culture around going to the pub and things like that. And I didn't really realize how British it was until you said that. And now I can't unsee it. That's great.
I think Australia sometimes falls into that middle ground that, I'd imagine someone, from the United States, North America, Canada, or whatever, they're, when they see something from England or Britain or something, and it's very jarring, it's like, whoa, this is something really different.
Mm.
People from England, the UK, they're like, cool, typical Hollywood American movie. Yeah, all that grit. And we're here in the middle, and we're like, look, we're so influenced by Hollywood, America. And then it's also we also take on so much Australian media and materials and stuff, and then it's like the stuff from the UK and Britain. Mm. Sometimes we actually forget we're watching stuff, and it's like, yeah, it just seems so natural. Like there's and we forget that there's such a jarring difference between the two things, the two cultures. Yeah. And it's like this movie is a prime example of just like embracing all of that British humor, wit, and then just, I don't know, just the average day, but in this exaggerated setting that it's like, hang on, it's good. And you know what? The whole premise of of this film, like with the zombie outbreak happening, like they made it a point to be like, look, it's going to be a comedy, but anytime, like all the zombies are going to be treated as a genuine threat. There's going to be real fear and seriousness to them and what they're doing. It's the characters that are in this moment and their outlook on and their approach to the situation. That's where we're going to find the humor and all of that. And then obviously there's a whole lot of other, and it's all through their filmmaking that they create this sense of, those comedic beats and stuff, which we'll get to, but it's, like what they've said, it's right. It's like the zombies are a serious thing here. It's just, it's just such a crazy balance. But again, we'll dive into it, I'm sure.
We certainly will. Let's quickly, before we get further into that, let's just give a little bit more of an overview of the movie's performance. So, budget and box office. So the film actually cost $6 million. But it made $38.7 million worldwide, which includes its re-releases in 2020 and 2022. That's not much at all. That's much less than I thought it would be, actually, to be honest. Given how, the impact that this movie has made on, from a cultural point of view. But critically, an overview of it, critics have said that Shaun of the Dead cleverly balances scares and witty satire, making for a bloody good zombie movie with loads of wit. It certainly does. Can't argue with that. And Rotten Tomatoes have it at 92%, which is based on 217 reviews. The average rating is 7.8 out of 10. Metacritic gives it 76 out of 100 based on 34 reviews. Roger Ebert, who wrote that he was by now more or less exhausted by the cinematic possibilities of killing zombies, and so he was glad for what Shaun of the Dead brought to the table outside of this. And I do agree with that as well.
And that's just it. Like the zombie genre, like what you get from, at least at the time, like what you had seen was zombies come, people run, people fight. Mm-hmm. They try to survive. That's it. Rinse and repeat. This was taking the premise. And as I said, like with all the comedic stuff, it's saying something. There's a commentary around, the like people. And not just like the British side of things, but it's just like the characters that we meet at the start of this, the world that they live in, they're already zombies.
Mm.
They're already this mindless, day in, day out, doing the same routine. Like,
it's
just doing so much more with it. Throw in the love story, throw in the relationships, the dynamics of the characters.
It brings the stakes down to a point. Like, it makes things a little bit more mundane in the way that these characters are just living an average life. They're not important. They just are average people. Then all of a sudden they're facing the apocalypse, and it's almost not taken seriously by them because they're not perceiving it in that way until they are. And then the stakes become quite real, very much, especially when you're talking about other cast members, family members, things like that, they get bitten, and, the inevitable kind of conclusion to that kind of thing as well. So it's just such an interesting flavor, an interesting way of doing a zombie movie, where you're not looking at the action side of things, you're looking at more how the people are dealing with it. And I think that's great. I think it's great.
All right. Now, obviously, like, it didn't do crazy, like, box office numbers, but you think about the way this movie was released, number one being a British film, the biggest part of a box office is usually from, the Hollywood side of things, so the American sort of release. But, that's not what it's really all about. Like, the love for the movie that had followed after its release is really where it all sort of came about. And look, with it, it did receive accolades and awards and things, not like the big end side of things, but I'm just going to rattle through a whole bunch of things that it got given. Mm-hmm. 2004 British Independent Film Awards, won Best Screenplay. 2005 Evening Standard British Film Awards, won the Peter Sellers Award for Comedy. That was for Simon Pegg. Mm-hmm. 2005 Empire Awards, won Best British Film. 2005 Saturn Award, won Best Horror Film. 2005 Bram Stoker Awards, won Best Screenplay, although it did tie with Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind that year. Mm-hmm. 2004, Total Film Magazine named Shaun of the Dead the 49th greatest British film of all time. 2006, Channel 4 listed it as the third greatest comedy film of all time in their list of the 50th or the 50 greatest comedy films, only beaten by Monty Python's Life of Brian and Airplane, which obviously ranked higher, hence them winning. 2007, Stylus Magazine named it the 9th greatest zombie film ever made. 2007, Time named it one of the 25 best horror films. Bloody Disgusting ranked the film 2nd in their list of the top 20 horror films of the decade. In 2009, Now deemed Shaun of the Dead the best film of the decade. Like, it was making lists. It was being given awards, it was being given shouted outs.
A lot of that horror, in the UK, I can notice. Stuff. There's a bit of a flavor around them.
Yeah. Look, it's appreciated where it's appreciated. And look, I guess on that, you can probably say that maybe a lot of the British humor didn't actually really land with American audiences. And that's fine.
I said,
we're the middle ground. We get our entertainment from both ends and we like it. And that sounded dirty and it didn't mean to.
Yes, I know that it didn't, but it certainly did sound dirty. Calm down, please. Now, it would be interesting to find out whether or not American audiences did resonate with this. Because I think I resonated with it because I related to it to a point. Interesting. I don't know if we're ever going to find that out. If you're an American and you're listening, please let us know.
Do you know any American people?
One or two. Oh. They may not be because it's all anonymous on the internet. We don't really truly know. So anyway, franchise. We mentioned at the top. So this is part of the three flavors Cornetto trilogy, which sometimes referred to as the Cornetto trilogy. That's how I know it. And this one as well, or the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy. Completely makes sense when you think about the three films that are a part of that. But Cornetto trilogy is what I've always kind of heard as it. So they're all anthology movies directed by Edgar Wright and always written by Wright and Simon Pegg. Produced by Neera Park and the series, so the three movies, stars Pegg, Nick Frost and Bill Nighy. In all of them, with several other actors, including Raph Spall and Martin Freeman, kind of appearing in all three. Some of them are, they have, especially Martin Freeman has a much larger role later. But the trilogy consists of, so you've got Shaun of the Dead, that's what we're talking about today, Hot Fuzz, we've already mentioned, and then The World's End. The World's End, have you seen The World's End? I'm assuming you've seen all three, right?
Yeah, The World's End was the one that I watched pretty much like as it came out. So it was I was very much on board with it.
Like I said, that one took me years to watch that. But it, they're such different movies, aren't they? They're so different as well.
I want to give a critique on it, but then I'm also thinking maybe I should reserve that for maybe watching it again. I've always had Hot Fuzz at high regard, but
I think Hot Fuzz out of the three of them, to be honest, might still be my standout. I think the World's End was the weakest out of the three, I reckon.
I don't want to show my hand, but Hot Fuzz was the best of the three. Was.
Oh, this is going to be exciting. Ah. I'm looking forward to this. Okay. So, now when we're talking about Cornetto Trilogy, we'll cover this. I guess the ethos behind it is each film actually makes a passing reference in some way to a different flavor of Cornetto ice cream, like a trumpet. Trumpet, we used to call them here, didn't we? I think
we have Cornettos.
Yeah. You know, they're called Cornettos, but they used to be called trumpets, I think, in Australia.
When that I was does growing ring up. A bell.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Shaun of the Dead features red strawberry flavored ice cream, signifying the film's bloody and gory elements, definitely. The Cornetto was included as, in this case, in this film, his hangover cure. And that's also because it was actually Wright's actual hangover cure back when he was younger. Now, at the after party for the film, everybody received free Cornetto ice creams. So Wright and Pegg decided to include another reference to Cornetto in the next film in a failed attempt to get more free ice cream, which is a great little tidbit. And the name originates from a silly joke during the promotion of Hot Fuzz. One interviewer pointed out the use of Cornettos in the first two films, and Wright jokingly said that they represent a trilogy comparable to Christoph. Oh, you got the pronunciation of this one, Jace? Christoph.
I'm going to say Kalowski's
Three Colors.
Kalowski, yeah, that, you nailed it, man.
Kalowski's Three Colors film trilogy through 1993 to 1994, which I'm not familiar with, but Edgar Wright is a he's a connoisseur of all things cinema, so that makes sense.
Wow.
Shaun of the Dead, Shaun of the Dead, Strawberry, Hot Fuzz, Classico, Vanilla, and The World's End is Mint. And you can see that also in the color palettes of the films as well when you watch them. Very cool, very interesting. I like Cornettos. Do you like Cornettos, Jace?
Look, I like ice cream, man. And like, we all know the best part of the Cornetto is the bit at the end.
The little chocolate bit at the end. Absolutely.
Every time. Whether it's a Cornetto or a trumpet or whatever, it's all great. Look, just some other media that, Shaun of the Dead had lended itself to. Pegg and Wright actually scripted a one-off tie-in comic strip for the British comic magazine 2000 AD titled There's Something About Mary. This was set the day before the zombie outbreak. The strip follows and expands on the character of Mary and details how she became a zombie. So that's the first zombie that they come across.
Yeah.
The strip, along with two others, were made available on the DVD release of Shaun of the Dead. They wrapped up plot holes in the film, like how Diane escaped and survived the Winchester incident, which I'm actually quite a...
Did she survive?
Kind of. Well, according to this...
Okay. Because I don't know anything. I don't know any extra lore behind it, but She was dead. Anyway,
she definitely appeared dead in the film. And Ed's, we never saw her actually. Anyway, but Ed's, the other one, Ed's fate after taking refuge in the pub's basement. Mm. So not so much plot holes, but I guess like unresolved.
Yeah,
unanswered stuff. The comics, which feature Peg and Wright's voices on the DVD, are in black and white. They were drawn by Oscar Wright, a graphic artist, and the name might sound familiar, Edgar Wright's brother. So there you go. In 2005, IDW Publishing released a four-issue adaptation written by Chris Ryle with input from Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, all very legitimate, and drawn by Zach Howard. No relations there. The comic also contained scenes that were left out of the film.
Okay.
In 2006, the National Entertainment Collectibles Association announced that it would produce action figures based on the film. Mm-hmm. Wish I had some of those. That'd be pretty sick. Imagine a little Sean with a baseball bat. In 2007, Upper Deck Entertainment released a card for the popular World of Warcraft trading card game, an ally named Shaun of the Dead, with the power of bringing back allies from the enemy graveyard.
Okay.
Zombies, get it? No, it's a whole thing. And Peg and Frost actually reprised their roles as Shaun and Ed for a public service announcement video, The Plan, which was released on the 19th of March 2020 on YouTube. In the video, Shaun and Ed share advice about the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, with the former urging the latter to follow National Health Service guidelines.
Yeah, right.
Stay home, avoid the pub. You know how it all is.
That's great. I haven't seen any of that, but that's brilliant. Did you just happen on YouTube and see what it looks like?
All on YouTube.
It's all on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I'm gonna check that out.
It's PSA pretty straightforward
about COVID. I think it's great.
Yeah, but obviously, like, you get to see the characters back again. You know, they're doing their thing. And again, it's got that dry, blunt thing.
Yeah,
and of course, avoid the pub. You know, and it's like, oh, and it pains them to say it.
Yeah. I imagine so. Another thing, I guess, to really talk about is the cultural impact of this film, which is pretty substantial, to be honest. So we'll go through some of it. Shaun of the Dead, it contains many references to George A. Romero's films. So you got Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, very obviously, and particularly Day of the Dead as well. So the name Shaun of the Dead, it's a pun of Dawn of the Dead. I don't know if I needed to explain that, but if I did need it for you, I'm very sorry.
Elaborate.
I cannot elaborate any further.
Break it down for me.
So you get Shaun of the Dead and you get Dawn of the Dead. How familiar are you with George A. Romero's kind of horror movies, you personally?
I can't even remember which ones I've watched. I've watched a handful of them.
Hmm.
I feel like, and this is the worst, like, they're so interchangeable.
I think so too.
I've definitely watched Night of the Living Dead. I know I've watched that one, and then it's pick and choose from there. I've seen Snyder's remake, then watched a lot of other zombie movies.
Fair enough. I've definitely seen Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. I just don't know about anything else, really. I haven't seen Snyder's remake either. I haven't seen that, but yeah.
Yeah, there's heaps, man. It's like Isle of the Dead and that's the only one I can think of, actually. That's not on this list. There are a few.
So interesting little bit here that we've got here. George A. Romero, he actually called Peg and Wright after watching the film to give his approval. Great. He was so impressed with Peg and Wright's work that he asked them to make cameos for his 2005 film, Land of the Dead. Both Peg and Wright insisted on being zombies. Now, I haven't seen that, so I can't actually confirm that it did happen, but I believe it. Peg and Frost also reprised their roles in animation as Shaun and Ed in the Phineas and Ferb Halloween special, Night of the Living Pharmacists, which was in October of 2014. This is great. And other zombie film references include From Dusk Till Dawn, and 28 Days Later, seen both, and I agree with that. And another to Italian gore director, I don't know this guy, Lucio Fulci, with the restaurant called Fulci's. So it's interesting.
Look, the film saw renewed interest in 2020 as an internet meme, as all things do.
Yeah.
It began trending on Twitter, because the film's poster, which shows zombies pressed up against the door windows, bears a striking resemblance to a photojournalist image of protesters in Ohio in at the State House demanding a lockdown be lifted. So it's like end of the world pandemic, protesters up against windows and doors and things. It's crazy.
Brilliant
all
stuff.
Of the symmetry there. Film scholar Kyle Bishop, literature scholar and leading zombie film researcher Peter Dendel. What a niche. craft.
Yeah, what a title. Well done.
There. And sci-fi scholar Jerry Canavan all comment on Shaun of the Dead as part of a large body of zombie narratives produced in the wake of 9/11. Bishop explained that the renaissance of the subgenre reveals a connection between zombie cinema and post 9/11 cultural consciousness. I guess, you know,
it's now, all that stuff. With that, I debate that this particular film is part of that movement. I understand that there's a renaissance of that, but I think it'd be primarily a US thing. You know, this is very much its own UK identity, not really kind of, that would be my take.
Hey, anyway. 9/11 affected the world, mate. Changed the world.
Certainly did, I understand. I just don't know how far-reaching it did in cinema terms, that's all.
What we definitely can't argue on is the film's blend of humor, social commentary, and character-driven storytelling set a new standard for the zombie genre. Subsequent zombie films, such as Zombieland from 2009 and Warm Bodies from 2013 adopted a similar approach, balancing horror with humor and character development. Films that have been based on or inspired by Shaun of the Dead include One of the Dead, Heisen of the Dead, and Shed of the Dead. Classic, that one. Say none of them. Don't ask me about them. Horror novelist Stephen King described it as a 10 on the funometer and destined to be a cult classic.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, the film has garnered a cult following, generally among millennial comedy and horror lovers alike.
Yeah.
So there it is. All things said and done. Shaun of the Dead, cult classic status. It's been 20 years. That wraps up the cultural impact.
Yep.
I mean, dare I say it contributed at least to just the abundance, the overwhelming abundance that we got of zombie material.
Yeah.
Following, you know, The Walking Dead, World War Z, iZombie, I don't know, whatever else you can think of that has zombies in it. It's a part of it. It all came about around that time.
Yeah, I can see that. I really do see the parallels there with Zombieland and Warm Bodies, those kind of things like you're saying. Like,
yeah,
those movies definitely do intersperse. They're more of a human story, like a comedic human, often either romance or like emotional as well.
And they're the zombie
action.
Ones.
They're not action movies. They're more...
Take like the other horror comedy type things and not just like your dumb, like... horror slapstick stuff, like actual genuine, like here's horror, here's very creative, like intelligently written humor throughout it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but more of an attempt has been made since this film to do things like that.
Yeah, and I think all the better for it, I reckon. All the better for it. Now, this movie itself, so you know, that's its legacy, that's its impact, that's, you know, that's the kind of mark it's made and, you know, when it was released and since then. The movie itself, though, it's quite a unique movie. I mean, this is my opinion anyway. Quite a unique movie in the way that it's kind of shot and its filming style and its visual storytelling, right? And what I mean by that is you've got a really interesting, unique editing style that Wright does. And he does, this isn't the only movie he does it. All three Cornetto movies, he does it, as well as Baby Driver and a couple of others. He does the hyper quick cut editing technique where it changes something mundane, like going to the toilet and getting dressed to go to work, into something intense. And it just changes the pace of the movie to make it feel, sometimes ironically, sometimes just for comedic effect by itself, but it really just transforms, you know, I guess the pace of the movie and how the viewer kind of, you know, is along for the ride. like we're watching a zombie movie, and then all of a sudden you see, you know, quick cuts as Sean's going to get his ice cream from the freezer, kind of thing. Or yeah, like you said, buttering toast and having about to have an argument with his roommate. These are all mundane, nothing things, but the way that Edgar Wright kind of cuts it all together and the choreography with it, it just changes the dynamic completely. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. Like you said, like, you know, like putting your work shirt on, going to the toilet, buttering a piece of toast, grabbing your keys, walking out the door. It's like multiple tasks that need to be done. It's like it's pieced together like you're preparing for battle. Like, yeah. Like we're arming ourselves. We are suiting up, arming up and going.
Yeah.
it's so good how it's done. And it's, like there are those quick moments like that, but even just how certain, like this is throughout the movie, how certain things are framed, how there's certain blocking being used to like not show certain things until there's a need for it. It sets up, you know, and this is all part of the humor as well. Like the how the comedy's delivered. Take the scene, or the opening scene where they're at the, you know, they're at the Winchester, at the pub, and it looks like a conversation between two people.
Yep.
You know, we've got Sean, we've got Liz, they're just having a conversation.
Yep.
It's starting to get a little bit heated, they're kind of getting argumentative. It's just the two of them. We're like, okay, cool, this is quite intimate, it's quite already quite dramatic. It's cutting quickly between the two of them, but then suddenly they're referring to, you know, like dragging your friends along to, you know, the pub, hanging out with the same people. And then it cuts to, it's like, oh, it, you know, it cuts to Ed. That's paying off that setup there. And it delivers on the joke that it's like, there's Ed. He's there.
Yeah.
He says something, punchline there, boom. But then it's like a little bit back and forth again, and then refers to Liz's friend, suddenly cuts to them two just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's those things, like the way things are framed, the quick cut, what we see, what we don't see.
And the clever dialogue as well, connecting it all together as well.
Absolutely. All of those layers. Like, it's not just the witty writing, it's how things are framed, how things are not seen, how things are cut, delivered. You get multiple levels of jokes. And I guess we will dive more into the comedy and stuff when it comes to things. But I mean, it's all about this movie's like visual identity of how it's pieced together really does. It's its own unique thing, but it's not just there to be like, oh, look, I can cut stuff quick and like, you know, like put things on screen and, you know, make it a visual thing. It's like, it's doing it for a purpose. It's to, like you said, like with the him going to the toilet, puttering some toast, putting his work shirt on. It's like that is taking, like it works as a joke. It works because it's funny. It's like, oh, these little stupid things, mundane stuff. Yeah. It's like so dramatic, but it's also creating a feeling when you're watching the movie of like, this is getting erratic. This is getting crazy, you know, like it's getting hectic. The scene in the pub, it's doing that for the comedic beats. It's telling a story. It's setting up these characters and it's delivering multi levels of jokes and humor.
And there's
within the dialogue, it's madness, man. Like it's
It's well done. And there's another layer to it as well. It's really quick exposition provision, like for the audience as well. Like the Wright uses it, like when you're doing quick cuts and you jump in between it and you're framing it that way, you're just explaining something in literally less than 3 seconds. You've changed, like you've transitioned from one thing to another. One part of the day to another with that character without having to do anything. And you've done it in a humorous way. You're changing the tone, well, not the tone, the pace of the film. So people are, like you start to feel like there's a bit of momentum going on here all of a sudden. Then you stop and all of a sudden there's another punchline and it slows down a little bit, but then it cuts to it again. It's brilliant.
I like the, you point out like, you know, when Sean, you know, has a bit of, you know, after the breakup, they go on a bit of a bender and then, you know, sort of sits in his, what is it like, their kitchen laundry kind of room, rumpus bit, sits, it's nighttime, and then like a light switch, it's daytime. Everything's exactly still as it is. It's like, it's just something like that. It's just like, it just gives a spark to the scene where it could have just been, fades to black, wakes up. It's one. It's like, yeah, like, well, there's nothing interesting. That's the thing, right? Like, how do they do that? And it gets me thinking, filmmaking, magical.
Well, yeah, Wright does, and he's known with his other movies as well, but this is definitely one of the examples, is he does in-camera transition work. Like, that's what he does. So exactly what you just said then, that transition from night to day, you're moving into an entire new scene and the camera doesn't change. Well, it does, but what you're getting is an environmental change, which very clearly signifies time has passed, and it happens within less than a second, and it's all done in-camera. Like, it's very clever. Very clever filmmaking. I like it.
There's also like, there's a lot of the, like, even like visually, and they're like, this movie is supposed to both pay homage, tribute, you know, but also kind of emulate at the same time, like, you know, these old school zombie films. With that, like, I noticed that a lot of the film was like, there was like a, not like a 20-year-old movie kind of graininess, but there was a genuine, like, you know, the picture wasn't quite high quality. It was, there was just like a muckiness to it. Like the quality, the film itself had a grainy sense to it. I feel like I danced around that way too much. the look of, the look of this, you know, the outskirts of London, it's sort of like the grimy English, you know, like the skies aren't bright blue, everything's kind of dull and muted. You know, you take Sean's walk to the shops, you know, like it's a single, it's a camera track, doesn't cut, but it's, you know, the fact that they do this twice is incredible, but obviously the circumstances are completely different, but it's it's just such and a mundane is going to be a word we keep throwing out there, but it's just like, it's just very routine, bumping into certain people, he knows, you know, where it is. It's like, well, visually we're doing something interesting with the camera, what we're seeing, where we're moving and all of that, but it's like the guys just walk into the shops, man, like it's insane, but like you can't take your eyes off it. The camera,
that's right,
it straps you in and it goes, you are coming with us, and you're like, yes I am.
And it's so clever. Like, well, you know, the next thing I guess we could really talk about is how, you know, in the earlier parts of the film or different acts, there's a lot of there's parallels and repetition that change meaning, but it's using such similar content and context. Like that walk to the shops, so mundane, so boring, but yet it isn't. There's nothing boring about it. It's you're watching him and you're following him. And part of what you were saying, you know, about, you know, their end, like the idea originally with this movie was around, you know, people, like, you know, right, not knowing about the horse and mouth epidemic and all of that. It's delivered so well just through that walk. You know, people are starting to get a bit sick around him. He's just oblivious. And especially that second time he goes to get the cornetto for the hangover, and then you do see, you know, there's, you know, destruction everywhere, and he's still oblivious to the whole lot. Like, they achieve it so well with such a simple thing, just from
the blood on the fridge door, him slipping on what's obviously blood or guts, and then, or something.
And then you've got the, you know, the store owner, like zombie, who just appears in the background, just kind of, you know, there, and, you know, you've got the ball, like the soccer balls left on the, you know, the whole, there's broken windows in cars and there's dead people in doorways and all this stuff. And he's just oblivious to it. And it's like, you know, beat for beat, exactly what you've already seen. And yet you can't, like, it's beautiful. Really, really well done.
So, and again, it's that, I guess the callback to all the commentary really on that. It's like, especially like Sean, his character, and other characters around him, like, they're already living zombies, you know, like, not in the traditional sense, but and this is a time before, you know, he's not walking around just like checking something on his phone or something like that. Like, he's just zoned out in his own world.
Yeah,
it's such a routine that he's going through that he is just sort of on autopilot, you know. Sometimes I imagine we'd do the same, you know, like you go for a walk or you go for a drive, and then suddenly you're like, oh, I forgot I was driving. Obviously, you're not running over anyone or anything like that, but you know what I mean? It's just like, got here pretty quickly. Zoned out for a sec. Not in a, again, you're not passing out. It's just your brain kind of just switches off, or
you're on autopilot. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you do things so many times, repetitive.
Yeah.
Repetitive stuff. So all those things that this movie's saying, like, it really, I don't know, it just works. And there's so much humor to it. All the things happening in the background, the setup to like the fact that this outbreak is happening pretty much in real time, like as these characters are doing things.
Yeah.
You know, the majority of the movie, like 90% of it, is from Sean's perspective as well, which really helps, because we're very absent to what's actually happening. We only see the snippets of things in the background, you know, especially like bits of news reports or radio or something, or, you know, you just see a guy eat a bird, you know,
and then he disappears.
Or do you see it? And he disappears. Yeah. There's just things happening. It's a bit weird. There's, I don't know, there's so much setup amongst the, again, it's that mundane following this average schmuck just go about his day, so focused on his problems, you know, like, oh man, gotta go to mum's for, you know, for tea, can't forget the flowers, gotta take the girlfriend out to somewhere other than this bloody pub, forgot to make a booking. That's screwed his up. World falling to pieces. You know, that's him. He's like, all this other shit that's happening. It's just inconvenient time.
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think you nailed it there. Like, his challenges in this movie is him getting his life together and just doing something as simple as remembering an anniversary and booking a dinner is almost an insurmountable challenge to him. But then, you know, the whole point of this, his arc, is that, you know, Sean does rise to the occasion multiple times over and over again. But even as he's doing that, he does become a hero to a point, but he's still completely flawed. He's still that average, just random dropkick dude who keeps screwing up. Like, he brings the zombies back to the Winchester after they get there. Like, all of these things, like, he does rise to the occasion, but he keeps on screwing up at the same time.
Well, he never has an actual plan. Like, he has this long-winded plan, but he never actually gets to the end of the plan and says, and then, you know, it's just sort of like, we do this, and we'll end up here, which sounds great. And it sounds like he's a man of action. He's getting things done. But then it's like, no one ever asks, and then what? Because then when they do get to the pub, it's essentially that, now what?
We're gonna
have a round.
we're gonna have a round. What else do you do? And that's But the like I was saying before about the repetition, the parallels and stuff, and how Wright uses like repetition to, I guess, get comedic beats and emotional beats out of that journey.
I know what you're gonna say. We go pick up mum, kill stepdad. Pick up Liz. But the plan keeps changing, and they keep repeating the thing again with those quick cuts. Humorous little, like,
it's so clever. You know what I didn't notice until we're looking at the, you know, I watched the movie again and you know, looked at some of the notes and research. So Ed, you know, when, you know, after Liz and Sean have broken up, and, you know, Sean's distraught, they're in the Winchester again, they're drinking and they're getting rid of, you know, they're slamming beers, and Ed's clearly just like, let's just go on a bender, you'll be fine, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Ed,
and
actually,
he outlines the entire
freaking movie. Can you recall it? Because I've got it here in front of me.
I've got it written down with each thing that happens.
Each step.
We'll have a Bloody Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So
Mary's the shop Mary, attendant who they kill, or who is the first zombie
they come across is, and they see that her name is Mary.
Yeah.
And, you know, she gets quite bloody. Have a bite at the king's head. Well, stepdad, you know, gets bitten. Quite emotional, quite dramatic.
Yep.
Couple at the little princess. So obviously when they go to get Liz, who's the princess, there's also the couple there.
David and Diane.
Oh, I remember Diane. I was like, David. We'll stagger back here, as in we'll stagger back to the pub. They do their like zombie impression, little waddle to the pub, and then bang, back at the bar for shots. And now, of course, they're at the bar. get the shotgun out.
Get the shotgun out.
Start it's, shooting.
It's so brilliant. Like those, like I said, that the parallels there where something completely meaningless is being done in the first act or something. But when it repeats, it has real meaning, or it has, it's just a real clever way of you're foreshadowing to a point, but there's no chance in hell you're going to pick that on the first viewing, what he's just said. And it's more when you reflect on it, you're watching it multiple times, when you're like, you really see how clever they are in their writing and how they deliver it. It's brilliant.
I mean, and it's still, it's not like he's blatantly saying this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. It's still, he's still saying things that work as like, you know, we're going to go to this pub, then we're going to go to that pub, then we're going to that pub and have drinks there. But with interpretation, and of course it's like, you know, Sean's stepdad isn't a king, but the father figure, you know, like you interpret, you know, like he is the king of the, you know, the family, the all of that. So it's like, yeah, you know, you take that interpretation, you and it works. You run with it.
Yeah.
It's so good. What I found in this movie is that, like, there's so much subtle stuff set up. Like, there's nothing that happens in this movie that isn't to set up another joke.
Yeah.
Or something. And again, not just for the sake of a joke, but there's just something so meaningful that comes with things that are happening, being delivered.
Yeah.
Usually a joke actually, you know, in a lesser movie, you've got a joke that is said or presented and its sole purpose is for a laugh or a humorous thing. What I found is that, like, in this, you've got a joke delivered and its actual purpose is for character development or some sort of plot. It's like, it's crazy, man. Like, there'll be dialogue or something that'll set up a joke, but a joke will motivate or progress a character. The character will progress the plot. It's crazy. There's so much. And it all just comes down to how this movie is pieced together. This is a clean 90-minute, like, run. It's not a long, involved, you know, like, drama piece, but within its tight... You know, again, how it's all cut together, it's like you get so much meat out of it. And there's your zombie pun.
There you go. There you go. Like, and every, you know, every setup that they'll do earlier on in the movie with just simple dialogue, you know, you'll get maybe repeating dialogue, and but it completely has transformed since then. So you've got dialogue and character development, like, as in some dialogue is a catalyst and then gets the best out of characters, or it knocks onto another joke, or it knocks onto another thing, or you just get the throwbacks that are completely different when you're looking at them again. Like, one of my favorites in the movie is the fart joke, where he goes, you know, I'm sorry, Sean, and then he goes, no, I'm sorry, and then Sean sniffs and you smell the fart, and he says, he goes, why do you do it? And he goes, I'll stop doing it when you stop laughing. And then, you know, cut to the very end of the movie and Ed's been bitten. You know, he's doomed and he's on his deathbed. They're about to say their goodbyes. He's giving him the rifle for his last stand and a cigarette. And then he goes, I'm sorry, Sean. And it's, you know, Sean's crying and all that. And then, you know, he goes, he smells it. And he goes, why do you do that? And he goes, I'll stop doing it when you stop laughing. But, you know, that is the end of their relationship, you know. And yet he's just so he's happy. It's just a beautiful little moment between the two of them. And then they hit, you know, bump heads together and that's it. They say goodbye. You know, it's
so, like, in
such a different way, the same lines, exactly the same lines, and yet such a different meaning and such a different hit and different,
And that's essentially, like, that's essentially a fart joke.
It's a,
like,
fart joke.
That's a fart joke there, but it, like, where it's presented, it's that
bleak.
Second time round.
It's so bleak, you know.
It's about their friendship, like, they're reconciling, because obviously, like, the last time they actually had a proper interaction prior to that was, you know, Sean screaming at Ed outside the pub before they went in. Then it was all just like bang, bang, bang. Like, they didn't have a moment to breathe. That's their first, like, reconciliation. Ed's essentially gone. He's gone.
Yeah.
They're saying goodbyes. Like you said, when they you know, tap their foreheads together, and it's just like, they're parting ways. And it's like that joke just reminds you of their just boyish, childlike relationship that they had. Like, just these two mates, they're both idiots. It's just very sweet. From a fart joke, Like that's the depth of this humor. It's mad, man.
But it is. I mean, it is about the performance of these guys too. Like, you know, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. Like, they've got amazing chemistry, and they can pull that off. And the emotional beats are so different. And it is just a fart joke, but it is, you know, it's the end of the world the second time they're doing it, and they're, you know, one of them's about to die. It's, just so clever, and that's such a unique way, you know, of having, like, producing a movie with, you know, just the same dialogue from the start to the finish, and yet such a different environment, different, you know, just you get so much more out of it, like, you know, from the start of the movie to the second. And it's so, what's the word? It's like, it's misdirected. Like, you just don't expect this. You know, when you hear these lines again, you, when you heard them originally, and then you recognize them, and you, it's beautiful. It's really, really well done. One of the other ones that I noticed as well, you know how you got Yvonne? You know how they run into Yvonne, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She says to him, you know, like that awkwardly when they see each other before the zombie apocalypse really starts, you know, she goes, oh, I'm glad somebody got out of there. And they're just talking about, you know, the hometown or something like that, right? But yeah, then, you know, at the very end, when she kind of comes in with the military, and she says exactly the same thing, I'm glad somebody got out of there. And she's talking about just the shitty situation and the pub, you know, and the zombie horde killing everybody. And she's just reflecting that, wow, you survived it. You know, I'm glad someone got out of there. Same word, same words, yet completely different meaning. And just
The biggest repeated line is the, you got red on you. And it's like, the first few times you hear it, it is literally just referring to like the red ink from the leaking pen in Shaw's shirt pocket. And as the movie progresses and the zombies come out and all of that, it's referring to literally blood on his shirt. Got rid of you. And it just shows like how, you know, like the movie's taking a dark turn, you know, like shit is getting real. And it's like, it's no longer about, I got ink on my work shirt, you know, like that's, you know, that's sort of illustrating, you know, sort of like a fault in, you know, like the, just the structured world that we've got of just like, you know, everything needs to be perfect and pressed and, you know, ironed out and clean. That it's like when shit hits the fan, it's like,
none of that matters. God,
now I'm covered in blood. Like, you know, it's just blood. Who gives a shit about my shirt being what it is? And it's like, it's done. The scene where Sean, like, he takes his name badge off, he just leaves it in the bathroom. It's like, it's sort of him just being like that's the end of that. Like,
it's transitioning.
This is me from the old world. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I agree. He's transitioning into, you know, he's getting his shit together, but not only that, he's taking action. You know, there's an emergency and he's taking action. He's doing what he needs to do for his loved ones. He's no longer Sean, the electrical salesman with red ink on his shirt. He's now going into battle and getting blood all over him. And that's, and it's very,
Sean, the man with a plan.
Even though he doesn't have a plan.
Look, he still has a plan. It's just not a great plan. But it works.
It really does. But the, you know, the comedy and the horror blend there, you know, we're saying, you know, he ends up covered in blood, right? You know, because they're beating the shit out of zombies with bats and shovels and things, and there's gore, and it's, you know, you get Mary, the zombie, she lands on an umbrella stand, and as she stands up, you can see the hole, you can see Sean's head right through the hole that it's left. Like, it's a gory movie. It's a horror movie in that sense, but it's always punctuated by those one lines, those comedic, you know, beats all through it, and how the characters interact with each other, and that chemistry between Peg and Frost, you know, it's just, it's relentlessly funny and yet incredibly horrific. And there's this horror everywhere, and yet they manage to still have humor through it. You know, I think I like the blend between it. I really do. I think that's what makes this movie so unique in its sense as well, is that it's, you know, the comedy beats aren't like the horror stuff that's in there is legit horror. It's legit gore. It's legit gross zombies, blood, guts, everything. Like when David gets ripped apart It's just brutal. It's just so brutal. But in the lead up to that, and then afterwards, there's still jokes either side, and you can't help but laugh despite something. So like Diane running off to save him, even though he's dead, using his own leg and just throwing herself. It's funny. It's a weird comedic beat, and you've just watched some guy get ripped to pieces. It's such an interesting blend the way that they do it, you know.
As I said before, it's like the zombies are real, like they're a real threat. The gore, the violence is all legitimate. They're not, you know, it's not like, oh, it's comedic, so it's all, you know, like cartoony kind of violence. Like there is a legitimate horror movie being made here. But what they strip down on are, I guess, the scares. Like the movie isn't as scary as it should be because of the tone, the comedy, but the visual horror is all still there. The threat, the fear of the threat is there. It's just, we know that this is all, you know, generally fun and games, which is all good, but there's still serious shit happening there. As I said, the real zombie movie is, you know, like when you've got to put a bullet in your mum's head because she's turning into a zombie, or you know, like when I should stop calling him stepdad, buddy, Bill Nye's character, Philip, of course, Philip. When Philip says, oh, King Philip, hang on. There's a thing there. You know, like when Philip says, you know, like he knows that he's dying, and he basically just says to Sean, you know, like, you know, like, I wanted you. Yeah, I tried. Like, I wanted you to be strong in this world and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be a good dad and all that kind of stuff. And you can see Sean's like, no, like, I repent.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's like, but then, you know, he's breaking down because it's like, he's dead. Like he's dead. And it's a real scene with real emotion. But then, of course, we've got the laughs of like, open the damn door. The child locks. They can't get out.
Yeah.
You know, like Barbara not accepting that. That's like, what do you mean? He's still there. He's moving. Like,
yeah. And he's like, he's not there. He's not alive. And then he turns the radio off and you see him relax. Like, so it's almost, actually, that's a little bit of a thing of like, maybe, you know, maybe they shouldn't have killed Barbara. You know, if Ed could have stayed alive, and Philip's clearly some version of himself, Barbara probably could have.
Like, there's nothing left in him. Well, what I like is that, and again, this still tracks for like legitimate zombies, but this interpretation of zombies, it's like they still have like motor memory, so they still kind of function. I mean, this goes back to a lot of like the George A. Romero interpretations of zombies, how like they will do repetitive things from the actual like human version of themselves. So like you've got a chicken, like a zombie in a wheelchair, still wheeling along, still like wheeling it knows along. How to do it. Like it's so a lot of the zombies that like Sean comes across, especially when he's sort of doing his routinely thing, like walking down the street, is like you'll see the zombies still doing the activities that they were doing. They're just zombies now.
Yeah.
And so it's stuff like that. And obviously having Philip, you know, being able to turn off the music. Because Philip would have done that because he's like, that's shit. I'm going to turn that off. Yeah. Like it's
brilliant. It is really, really good. So it works really well breaking that, you know, the comedy and the horror split there, and how you punctuate those horrific moments where everybody would usually crumble and sit down in a fetal position, and there's a comedic beat and you just keep going from there. But I think it's brilliant. A lot of the things, what I noticed as well, right, is, you know, those moments when you might get like a dolly zoom or something onto Sean when he's looking and you see a look of horror on his face. It does the same thing. Like then they cut to an immediate joke. Like when they see Mary, for example, and it zooms in on him with a dolly zoom and he's realizing something's not right. And then the comedic beat behind it is he goes, she's so drunk. You know, like they don't realize that this is a zombie. She's a zombie. But, you know, and it happens a couple of times, like before the zombie apocalypse is kind of fully revealed, he sees the man about to eat the pigeon and there's a moment of realization, and then it will probably cuts to something comedic. Like all of these different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The scene, you know, like where he's like, let me just take a, you know, they're in that like little park alleyway thing and he needs to look at the pub. He's like, he climbs up the little slide, the toy slide.
Yeah.
It's the way it's framed. You just see his legs going up, little tiny steps. Let me just get a look. That's the humor.
And then
he'll come down. It's still kind of funny, but then there's an eeriness. You don't actually see above his waistline. Mm. What's he seeing?
And then you see his face.
Like, how many are there? Like, there's lots. Mm. And then it pans up. And this is probably the freakiest thing in this movie. It pans up and you just see the horde outside the pub. And it's just like, yeah, no, that's creepy, man.
And then it's subverted immediately when Diane gives them acting lessons and they decide to act like zombies, and that's enough. You know, like, it's just always to and fro, like it goes backwards and forwards between them. And that's, I think, how it's charm and how it keeps on going, you know. Otherwise,
Diane, MVP.
I reckon she's under.
She contributes quite a bit to the group.
Bit dumb though, but anyway.
That's okay.
And speaking of Diane, I mean, she is a character. We should probably talk about characters, I guess. Starting from the top, we got Sean, Simon Pegg. We really have covered him already. What I would talk about, if we're talking characters, I'd actually like bundle Sean and Ed together. So Simon Pegg and Nick Frost together, because this movie it's a buddy movie, you know, and they are, like, their chemistry is incredible, and they play off each other so well. I don't think you can really look at them as individuals, because it is about their chemistry and how they are kind of navigating, you know, this emergency and everything they're trying to do. I don't think this movie would be any good without that buddy kind of concept. And kind of actually any of the three Cornetto movies, to be honest, like, they're always.
They are the leads. I mean, I guess in this, like, the majority of the characters, bar from like two of them, really, like, they're all really linked to Sean in various capacities. The reason all these characters are together are because of Sean, and the other two characters I'm saying don't really fall into that are Diane and David, who I guess we'll dive into in a sec. But I mean, they're along for the ride because of reasons, but. All the other characters, like, it's Sean saying, all right, let's do this. Let's go get these people. Let's go get me mum. Let's everyone sort of related, even down to Pete, the other housemate, you know, he comes back at the end, but you know, like, he probably plays a smaller role, but you're right. Like, Sean and Ed, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, like, this really is their movie. As much as these characters are very similar in terms of, like, you know, just they're free-spirited, like, just getting on with life, doing their thing, just want to hang out at the pub, they're also very different individual type characters as well. Now, you've got Sean, who takes on a bit of a leadership role and just is like, and again, the man with a plan that doesn't really have a plan, but then you've got Ed, that like his first line in the movie, and I'll say it here, but you know, I'll probably have to cut the word as we for our show, but it's just like, any you want a drink,
yeah,
or something along those lines, right? And it's just like, that's his first line, and it just, again, it's that scene where they're at the pub and it's just cutting back and forth to these characters we're going to introduce to, like, he is essentially, on paper, he's a waste of space kind of guy. Like, he's, you know, like, does he work? Not really sure. Sells a bit of weed. Okay. Plays video games for the majority of the time he's in the apartment. Yeah. And other than that, he's kind of useless with pretty much everything that he's contributing until it's time for the shotgun at the pub. But essentially, he's there, like, not opening the door that has the child lock on it, you know, like, driving the other car into a tree.
Yeah.
Somehow he's just not very good.
He isn't. But then, you know, his arc, he becomes good. Like, he ends up by sacrificing himself, like, as in, he takes, he is a noble, you know, end to things. Although he ends up by just kind of fully reverting back to being a slob at the very end anyway. Right. You know, it's just in zombie
but we've form. Already talked about how sweet and tender that moment is.
It is actually really, really but it is such a good moment, especially when he turns around and he goes, I'm not laughing, and you know, and then he's crying, obviously. So bloody brilliant. But yeah, their chemistry is brilliant. And like Ed, like Nick Frost, just as a slob, is just so brilliant because he's not a slob in Hot Fuzz. And I can't quite remember. I think he's an accountant in The World's End.
Some of that, a bit of a professional guy.
Like very different people.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, they get to play these very different characters. And again, like, this movie is all about these guys essentially already being a type of zombie in their day-to-day world.
Yeah.
Not achieving much, not contributing, you know, like, to the world, just going about on autopilot, essentially absent to the things around them.
Yeah.
Except for what their one priority is, which for Ed is, you know, like playing whatever game he's playing, and Sean, you know, like just trying to get his, keep the women in his life happy, essentially. Mum, girlfriend.
That's his Everest, is just making the people in his life happy. He can't even achieve that, really. And then at the end, he gets them all killed except Liz, which is fantastic. And then Liz, you know, I mean, let's talk about Liz, right? So Liz, played by, who's the actress who plays Liz again? Kate Ashfield. You know, rightfully so, she's pissed off at Sean because he's just an absent partner. But you can tell that Sean wants to do the right thing. You know, like Simon Pegg's performance, he's very vulnerable in the way that he knows he's screwing up. But yet he's in that rut. He just can't get out of that rut. But Liz, like, you know, she you know, gives him the benefit of the doubt. She's getting a lot of pressure from her friends, you know, like saying, you know, he's a bit of a deadbeat and, you know, just get rid of him kind of thing. And yet she gives him another chance and then he screws it up again and he can't do it. And then she you know, she rightfully just goes, nah, we need to separate. We can't do this. And I think, like, that's all very convincing. Like, I feel for her, like, she, you know, she wants to be with him, but he's an idiot. He's just useless, you know. So you do feel very like she's justified and all of that. But then what I really love about Kate's performance is, you know, like Sean comes to rescue Liz, and you know they're on their adventure to try to get to Winchester to safety, which is not really safe in any way. So it just gets worse and worse. But when she sees those heroic moments, like when she sees those improvements in him. Like her performance, like you just feel it. Like she's really, I like their chemistry as well as a couple. And like she looks at him in a new light when he's doing these new feats. Like when he leads the zombies away and then he reappears. And then when he's very matter of fact about how to muck about with the fuse boxes and he's just taking charge of that little situation. I really like that, you know, their chemistry in that moment and how, you know, it's things are repairing and, you know, you're seeing him succeed and she's really, really enjoying it. I think it's great.
You know, with Liz's character, like she got some big laughs out of me and I haven't really worked out why these things were so funny, but whenever she's on the phone and she's just like, hello.
Oh yeah.
and like when she obviously ends the phone call, she's like, bye, 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 bye.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but again, more repetitive stuff because they did it a few times, but
yeah,
it was just really funny. And I think maybe it's because like I've met people that like just are like that on the phone.
Yeah,
I'm just like, it's so ridiculous.
I'm like that on the phone. Anyway. I know that I am. It's very relatable. I know.
Like you say bye too many times. Like
you say bye, 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 bye. Exactly. You do.
You're insane.
Definitely.
Look, so got some big laughs from her now. You know, we spoke about Ed and Sean, you know, like how like this movie being about their friendship. But the other side of it is the romantic element of this movie. Like it's in the genre description of this film. It, you know, romance is part of the thing. Besides the interesting sort of setup with their relationship dynamic, you know, like the, hey, look, you're pretty useless. Him being like, look, I'm still in love with her. I want to, you know, so I'm going to make sure she's safe, but they have broken up and pretty much until the end of the movie, they're still pretty much broken up. They haven't actually reconciled, got back together. In terms of their actual relationship, unfortunately, like we don't actually really see it explored. Like, it really is from Sean's point of view, but he idolizes her. He says he loves her, but there's nothing presented in this movie to show really why.
Mm.
In terms of, like, you know, I'm looking at the female characters in the group, and for some reason I just felt like comparing them. Mm. You know, I mentioned before how, like, Diane was or is like an MVP. She's contributing. She has the whole thing where it's like, hey, look, we can basically pretend to be the zombies to get through the horde. And it's like, oh, shit, you know, like, she's basically training them and she gets them ready. She stands up and says, you know, like, when Sean rocks up at the apartment and says, hey, I'm here to basically rescue. We're all getting out of here. There's a car downstairs. Let's go. Mm. She's the one that puts her hand up and says, well, look, it's a plan. Let's do it. She's taking action. She's like, there's nothing else happening here. Let's go. So she's pushing things along. She's getting things happening.
Yeah.
Liz, on the other hand, not so much. She's kind of...
She is a passenger. She's a passenger. So the whole
thing. She really is. Like, look, she plays her part as the love interest and the, you know, will they get back together, reconcile?
Mm.
And again, like, watching this again, like, and I couldn't remember how, what the outcome was, who died, who didn't, all of that. A little part of me was kind of disappointed that it was just Sean and Liz at the end. And I was like, like, when Diane's taken. And again, I know the comic little thing on the DVD says that she survived, but and we don't actually see her get ripped apart or anything. But when she got pulled out, I was like, oh, that's kind of disappointing. And then it's like, yeah, you got Liz at the end. I'm just like, oh, but you're kind of dull.
So we're spending more time on Liz than I thought we would. But what I think it's interesting because I've got a little bit of a different take on her, right? So
I mean, clearly, like you jumped in and said, like, you know, like, you buy the relationship, you're all for it. And I'm taking the stance for, like, there's not really much there. And she's kind of a boring character.
So this is where I disagree slightly, is that I think her entire purpose is to reflect the change in Sean. So her
acceptance at the end, or her forgiveness.
Correct. But the way she, like I was saying, those moments, like the moments I enjoy where you're seeing her, like, she's reacting to the change in Sean, right? She starts to see, you know, a change in him. He's taking charge and she's, you know, very much impressed by what's going on. All of that kind of stuff. I don't think that there's intention to have agency in this. I think her role is around, I guess, highlighting Sean's arc. That's what I interpret it as. So I don't necessarily have anything expectations around her. Like, watching it, I don't feel like I've been disappointed by a character, because I feel like her purpose is to actually see, she's a contrast to see where he starts and where he finishes, which sucks.
I can buy that. And but I agree with you there. Like, that's her purpose and that's fulfilled. And she does that successfully. But if you strip that away and it's like, her as an actual character, it's just pretty, very null. Like, there's just nothing.
Put it this way, if she did die, it wouldn't have really impacted the rest of it, you know, I don't think. Like, as in, so I agree with what you're saying, but I do, if her purpose really was just as a contrast to, you know, Sean's arc, it achieves it. And I think she does it well. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of a big contrast to Sean, you've got David. I already mentioned, you know, like, Diane, amazing. Love her. Don't know why. It's a bit weird. Might have a weird thing for her. Don't know. But David, just like neurotic, very like against the plan, wants to play it safe, questions, I guess, the appointed authority that Sean has.
Yeah.
And look, probably for good reason. I mean, look, I can see where he's coming from with a lot of it, but at the same time, it's just like, dick, you're waiting for him to go. You're just like, get rid of this guy. Come on, let's do it. But that's all part of it. You kind of, it's set up to hate him. The subtle, like, every now and then they just keep saying that it's just like, we know you're in love with Liz.
Mm.
But he's very clearly with Diane, but it's like, we know you're in love with Liz. And then I think he does deny it, but it's almost like, I am not.
Yeah. Like, why does he say that? What does he mean by that? I don't understand what they mean by that kind of thing. And Dylan Moran is brilliant. Now, I'm a really big fan of Dylan Moran, but I didn't know him before this movie. This was kind of my first little I found, like, I saw him and I didn't realize he was a stand-up comedian in this, and then two after this. So this was my first really, I thought he was an act, like a genuine, like his forte, it was acting, but it isn't. It's actually stand-up comedy. Like, he's not in many movies. So, but he's just the perfect, you hate him. You just hate him. And he's, yeah, he's in love with Liz, but it's not just that. He just challenges Sean on pretty much everything. On every decision, all of, you know, but the pinnacle, I think, the bit that really, like, I remember seeing it for the first time and going, oh my god, what an absolute piece of shit, is when when he pulls the trigger at Sean, but it's empty. Like, did you pick it up?
Oh, like yeah,
like he's been put, you know. He's been put on the spot. Everyone knows that he's in love with Liz. Everyone knows that he's being a piece of shit. And he's just like, he's pointing the gun at Sean and then he pulls the trigger and it goes click. And then he obviously he tries to just go, I'm leaving. I'm done, kind of thing. Absolute asshole. It was like, and the perfect intent demise.
To kill. Like he had intent to kill him.
Yeah. So after all that, I mean, and yeah, him wanting to kill the mum, but that also makes, that's rational sense in that, you know, we all know you got to kill the loved one who's turned into a zombie as well.
But it's like there's, you know, there's a tact to it. There's you don't just think, and you know, and again, it's a big reflection on, you know, we go back to Sean's character, and again, this is good. Like, you know, we've got a fun character in David, but then it's like the big moment where he kind of becomes the antagonist. Mm. It's all about Sean's character sort of reaching a new height, and that's obviously like his mum's, you know, turned.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of failing to accept that.
Yeah,
and there's this guy that's pointing a gun at his mum, and you know, one, like, this is powerful. He stands up and he's just like, stop pointing that gun at my mum. And it's like, I feel like every son watches that scene and just goes, "Yep, like, don't do that." Like,
definitely.
I mean, obviously, we know, like, we need a moment to come back down to earth and say, this is something that doesn't need to happen, but give it a second. Like, and David's obviously just gotta do it. Gotta do it. But I mean, look, he gets the most violent death. And I think,
oh yeah,
the way the character's been set up, it's like, it's earned. It's like, it's obviously still horrific, but I mean, you kind of go like, oh yeah, that's a good one.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, you know, the like I was saying before around the comedy and horror blend, that this movie just kind of goes backwards and forwards really, really well. You like you said, that is like the most horrific part of this movie, is that scene. I remember I didn't expect it. Like, it was unusually gory compared to the rest of the movie. Even though there's still plenty of gore, right, but like, it came out of nowhere, just how brutal it was. But I do remember going, yeah, take that, you piece of shit. Kind of like, as in, I was like, I remember just feeling a little bit like, yep, definitely well earned. Like, they just built him up as a character so well that such a brutal demise was like, oh yeah, cool, great. That's exactly what should have happened, you know?
But then it's almost ruined with, like, you know, obviously, like, his limbs are just getting ripped off and stuff, and it's crazy. But then, like, you know, you got Diane, who, I don't know if I've said yet, like, played by a much younger Lucy Davis. And she, you know, she just runs out there with a lay, and I'm just like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
he's absolutely in love with Liz. My God. Like, what are you
but she
doing,
said that
lady?
She accepted it. She said that she accepted it. But
like, she knows, but, you know, she's obviously still... That's her man, so she's getting it done. But, you know,
I mean, come on, you're holding his leg. You are an absolute idiot in that sense. So, you've got, you know, and you've also got like Philip and Barbara. You got Bill Nye and it's Penelope Walton, I think it was. That's the, you know, mum and stepdad.
Yeah.
That mum, I don't know about you, but Barbara, Penelope Walton, she actually just reminded me of my mum. Like, she just did such mum things throughout the entire movie. Like, everything was mum. It was like, so what I mean by that is she always downplays things. And she's like, oh, I don't want to make a fuss. It's like, you've been bitten. Like, you've been by a zombie. It's a big deal. But she's like, no, I know, didn't want you to worry or something. And you're like, God damn it. You should have told me this shit. So The most annoying mum things that happen.
I think I've only met your mum like a handful of times, possibly even just once. Maybe. So, I mean, I'm not too familiar with your mum. Like, I think usually, I think I was drunk the last time I actually met your mum properly. Which, you know, your wedding thing.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
Some big thing you were doing.
Yeah.
But when watching this, I was thinking, I was like, I feel like I know this mum.
Yep.
Maybe she not specifically is, yours, but like
everybody's
there are mums out there. She's everybody's mum. She's a lot of mums, and it is that that kind of I guess a lot of them are like that, where it's just like you said, just like don't want to make a fuss, not really taking things too seriously, and then you know, and it's like, oh, I think doesn't so and so live here? Like, it's all about like, oh, I know this person, so I'm gonna try and see, and then but still sort of stepping up when it comes to like, you know, when she's bit and it's like, look, I didn't want to worry him. So she's putting her kid first. There's all the stuff about like, he's not my real dad. He's like a 29-year-old man.
Yeah.
It's like, this is all that stuff. It's like, I've been married 17 years, you know, so she's still stern and taking us and telling her son how it is, you know, like, which is, you know, the mum thing to do, but at the same time, still just,
still a little bit ditzy, a little bit.
Don't want to make a fuss.
But there's a lot of there's a beautiful moment though. Like, so you've got that, you know, don't want to make a fuss, and Ben, she's firm with him about her husband for all 17 years, like very long time. And my favorite thing I think about that entire, sorry, her character in the whole movie is that moment between her and Liz, where she is very much aware that, you know, she's in trouble, and she gives the necklace to Liz, and she's, you know, just that little, it's a nice little touching moment.
Oh, and like, it's,
yeah.
You know what? This is a nice moment for Liz as well, where she openly says, you know, but where, and she's going to say, you know, like broken up or whatever. And Barbara knows that, but she's just like, I can't remember what she says, but it's along the lines of just like you guys, you'll work it out. This is the right thing to do. Give this to you. And it's like, you know, it's sweet. And again, it just comes back to this movie. Is balls to the wall crazy? Okay, it's not really balls to the wall. It's just crazy. It's not that crazy. But it still just comes down to these quiet moments that are meaningful and impactful. And you're just like, yeah, there's heart there. It's nice.
It really is.
And then you've just got a character like Philip being played by Bill Nighy that is just, I mean, he's being Bill Nighy.
He can never do anything wrong. He's brilliant. I love him in everything he does. Like, I really do. He's great. And he's great in this. He's so good. Like, he is the, like, very, 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 like, stereotypical stepdad. Like, very firm and, like, you know, you just, that relationship with him and Sean, it's like, you feel intimidated by him. And you can tell, like, Sean drops down, turns into a child when he's around him. Kind of thing, even though he's a 29-year-old man or whatever.
Oh, but the conversation in the kitchen where Sean was just like, you know, he touched me. And immediately is like, I lied. Well, like when you know, like Philip, you know, he's on the chair, he's just having a doze. It's just like, you know, Sean says, I'm sorry, I have to do this. Lifts the shovel. Yeah.
And he goes, what have you done now?
Like, what have you done?
Yeah. It's so brilliant. It's brilliant. I really do like it.
The only other main character we really haven't touched on, Pete, you know, like the other, if we've got an odd couple, if Sean and Ed are one couple, you've got Pete, completely different. Seems like he's got a bit more of a high-end job. Hates Ed. They're at odds. Ed hates Pete.
Yeah,
you know, like he turns at some point, he's in the shower, he's a naked zombie, you know, he comes back at the end and there's sort of like almost like it all just coming, you know, all just clading, coming together. But
what do you say? He says
he's there,
I think he says something like that. And then Sean says that to
Peter,
him when he kills him.
Sarah Finowicz is good. How he's perform, like his delivery here is, it's like, it's just, it's stern, it's brutal, it's blunt, it's honest, sort of a little bit up himself, snooty. You know, it's all, you know, it's like, oh, look, we've had some laughs, you know, like we played that game, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, all right. It's, yeah, I don't know. And it's a bit of a reflection of, especially with guys, like we grow up, we change. Some of us don't. And some of us do. And we don't always, we can't hang out with the same guys from high school, or at least live with them, like many years later. So yeah, there's all stuff there. But Pete,
he comes across as he very much is looking down on Sean and Ed, and he's better than them. But ultimately, he is just sharing a flat with his college mate, and his car isn't that great. He's not that much better than them. He's got a stable job. It's not really. He's built up like he wears a suit kind of thing, but he's not that big a deal,
To be honest, you're right. Like, he's probably just like, when I say doing well, like just getting by, doing his thing, middle class.
It's more that he's portrayed so much better than them. But then if you think about
just
it,
in comparison,
he's not.
Sean,
he's really, he's just
doing
a little bit average, really. I really love how, going back to kind of, I guess, like, the parallels and stuff, the flick of the mirror at the start, and he's standing there, and then he lectures Sean about, getting rid of Ed. But then later on, when Pete is a zombie, same thing. Sean closes the, like, opens the mirror or closes it, and you see just the silhouette of Pete in the shower behind the shower curtain.
Yeah.
Same cut, exactly the same framing and blocking of it. You've got Pete as a zombie in the shower instead. I think it's very clever, very cool. And his death is great. I like it.
His death is great.
We'll have to wrap. Like, I reckon we're probably almost, we've got one more thing to kind of cover, but we're almost talking longer than what the duration of the bloody movie is, I reckon. But the other thing I really, other than characters, which we kind of ticked them off a little bit, it's the music. And there's something I wanted to point out about this, and you see it in a lot of Edgar Wright's movies. He really has a really good relationship with music in his films. I think to the pinnacle would be like Baby Driver, where
Baby Driver would be my go-to. Yeah, like the music is basically its own character.
Well, in that movie, I know we're not reviewing that at all, but like they actually choreographed those 37 tracks that they chose. And then they actually filmed and blocked to those tracks, right? So in this movie, he's done it as well, and it's two songs mainly. And I wanted to point it out because I'm so impressed by that filmmaking. So you've got Queen's "Don't Stop Me Now," so that song, when it's playing on the jukebox, and all of a sudden they're having to defend themselves with pool cues with the bar owner. But the whole scene is built around the rhythm of that song, and they're hitting him in time with
it. The beats of the pool cues, yeah.
And that they actually came up with that, and they filmed that, and they choreographed it before they actually got permission from Queen. Well, I think it was Roger May. Is that his name? Yeah. And they actually afterwards, they actually, like, Simon Pegg actually begged him, can we definitely use this, because it's a brilliant scene kind of thing, which, obviously they got approval to do it. But they, there was another one that they, so, during the opening credits, how you've got, you're just like, you're seeing people meander as if they are zombies, but they're not.
Yeah.
And there's a track, it's called The Blue Wraith by iMonsters, right? That actually wasn't the song that film was choreographed to, but after they'd filmed it, they thought that it was actually better than the song that they originally put in there, and it had the same tempo. So, and because that entire sequence is about tempo, where they're kind of bobbing their heads as like zombies kind of thing, that all of that whole opening, like, credit scene and stuff. So two scenes where they specifically chosen, like, choreographed scene and, to go with music. And obviously Edgar Wright goes, much more in his other movies. But it's just, I think it's really, really good. It's really it adds a really good touch to it. I don't know. Do you agree? Do you like that stuff?
I mean, yeah. Short answer is
short answer,
yes. And hey, look, if you're going to use a Queen song in anything, Don't Stop Me Now, Peep Behind the Curtains, my favorite Queen song. It's just so fun.
Is it?
So much fun. Yeah. It's it was almost disappointing when it just comes to an abrupt stop, and I'm like, I kind of wanted it to like boot up again and keep going just to finish. It just cuts abruptly, and I'm like, oh, that sits not nice with me. but it works for this, just the abruptness of the scene and obviously them taking out the zombie. But yeah, now the music use in this film is pretty good. Both the tracks, the eeriness, the score and stuff, again, just really delivering on that horror element, making a real zombie movie at the forefront, you know, amongst all the comedic crazy stuff. It's almost like, again, it all just comes back to, this is a real horror movie just littered with sitcom characters. Like, they're just...
That's what it does feel like. You're right. It does.
Yeah. A bunch of comedians trying to survive a zombie apocalypse. This is what you get. Throw in Martin Freeman just for laughs. I think he has one line. that's the type of movie you get.
Yeah, that's right. And they barely make it. Most of them die. And that's fine. All right. Oh, look, we've talked, and it's probably time to wrap up and give our little rating. What do you reckon, Jason? Are you ready? Or you got anything else you want to discuss?
No, that'll do it. So I'll give a rating out of five if you want.
Sure.
I kind of thought before I sat down and watched this again, I was like, who knows where I'll land? You know, I remember liking it, probably. Yeah, middle ground somewhere. But halfway through this most recent rewatch, I think I made my mind up and I was like, this is on track for the big one. And just to avoid having to repeat myself, let's just keep this short and sweet. I'm going to give Shaun of the Dead full marks, 5 out of 5. I know it's crazy. I know it's outrageous, but I think it's just so... cleverly, I said I was going to repeat myself, but here we are. It's cleverly written, constructed, pieced together, cut, edited. You know, like the balance of the humor, the horror, the gore, the putting the zombies at the forefront in a realistic way. These just setups of jokes, the characters, minus Liz, the character. No, she said it this way. All of that. I mean, if I was to knock points off, it probably would be like the epilogue type ending where it is kind of just like a piss take. You know, like the world just kind of goes back. There's like zombies doing, you know, like Gladiator or like Wipeout or whatever the hell they do. That kind of, I'm like, all right, this is just ridiculous. But do you know what? It's such a fun ride that you accept it. Like, again, I watched this and I was just like, holy shit. Like, this is such a funny movie. For all the right reasons, not stupid humor at all. Love it, love it, love it. Where the hell is my DVD of it? Or hell, might even fork out for a Blu-ray. I'll see if I can come across it. Need it.
I reckon
Need
it's it worth now. It. So I reckon it's worth
5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. Brilliant. By the way, you know the zombie, you know, like gladiator thingy, that whatever. That's actually initially you see it in the news, kind of, you know, when they're flicking through channels and stuff. He's at the he's at the electronics store. You see it in the background, like that program where it's actual people doing it. So it is reintroduced. It is introduced earlier.
Again, a setup, right? That it comes back to.
Speaking of setups, before I give a review quickly as well, another one that I noticed just on this next recent viewing, Yvonne is wearing camo when he first meets her, but she's not affiliated with any military, but her character at the very end is affiliated with the military. You know what I mean? Like just another little, play on it. I liked it.
I imagine she just got recruited and it all worked out, or they just took her on. I don't know. They just took her on
with her golf club. Very cool. Okay. Anyway,
was a mysterious character though. Yep. Go.
But my review, my rating, I'm not even just going to fluff it at all. I've already said it all, and I'm not going to repeat it all. But it is just a brilliant movie, and it's 5 out of 5 for me too. Everything about it, I love. I just love it. And remember that I was saying that I hadn't watched it for a fair time, but I watched it a lot. I want to watch it again. It's interesting though, because my wife did not want to watch it with me. She didn't seem too interested. You know what? I don't think she's seen it before.
I asked her about it today at work, and I was like, because I referenced something in Shaun of the Dead, and I was like, oh, you know, Rob and I, did you watch, like, you know, Shaun of the Dead with him? And she was just like, nah, just not my thing. And I was like, okay. She's like, not my kind of comedy. So I don't think she knows. I don't think she knows.
I'm going to work on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on that one.
Do you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready for Hot Fuzz, man. Like, I reckon I'll chuck that in. Absolutely. Not saying we're doing a review here, but I'm just saying I'm going to jump in.
Yeah, I'll be keen.
Watch Hot Fuzz.
I'll be keen. So, I bloody love it. I'd even love to see this. The End of the World as well. Bloody hell, it'll be good. Okay, anyway, we got to wrap. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was our rewind to 2004's Shaun of the Dead.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Rewind and Review. Make sure you subscribe and download this podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find us, and feel free to leave us a review.
Mm-hmm. And of course, follow us on social media. We're on Facebook at Rewind and Review Podcast, and Twitter or X, depends, and Instagram at That Film Stew Podcast as well.
If you haven't already, check out our other shows, That Film Stew and Sounds Like Comics. Each of those shows also have their own Facebook pages.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been another episode of Rewind and Review. We'll see you on our next trip.
Please rewind this cassette before returning it to your video library.